Hello, everybody, and welcome to another great episode of The Rodcast. I'm Monty, and I'm here today with Pastor Rod. And today we're going to talk about part two of cross-cultural communication. It's going to be great, and I hope you guys enjoy it. So, to kick us off, Pastor Rod, let's talk about a story in the Bible where we see Jesus masterfully cross the cultural barriers and have communication. So can you take us through this amazing story we find in John chapter 4?
Yeah, John chapter 4 is a great whole chapter on cross-cultural communication. It starts with Jesus in Jerusalem. There's some opposition, and he decides to go back to Galilee, about 160 kilometers north. And in this story, he goes straight through an area called Samaria. And this area Jews don't usually go through. It is cross-cultural, it is cross-religion, it's just across. So the Jews usually go a longer way around this area called Samaria, but Jesus goes straight through. Here we go, John 4, 1. The Pharisees heard that Jesus was gaining and baptizing more disciples than John the Baptist, although in fact it was not Jesus baptized, but his disciples. When the Lord learned of this, he left Judea, that's Jerusalem, and went back once more to Galilee, straight line, 160 Ks. Now, he had to go through Samaria, and we talked about this last time. We're not going to talk about it this time, but this is the passion. This is the openness that Jesus has to all cultures, all religions, all people, men and women, young and old. And we see the heart of Jesus is passion to share with people. That's last week. And so now, so he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. And Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was the sixth hour, which means 12 noon, midday. And so he and his disciples are walking intentionally now, and we're talking about intentionality of cross-cultural. He's going straight through Samaria, and he stops at this well, which actually has Old Testament significance in a lot of scriptures. This is a well, it says here, that Jacob made, or Israel. Jacob became Israel, that same person. And a well, very, very deep well. It watered the people for, you know, many hundreds of years. And so Jesus comes significantly to a place that others don't go. And he sits down, he's tired, and it's midday. So it just shows the intentionality of Jesus to go straight line towards a cross-cultural situation. I think this is important because a lot of people today are a bit scared of cross-cultural because they might be misunderstood. You know, we're Australians, and you and I.
Oh, yes.
And we have a joy of being grown up in a very cross-cultural country called Australia. And I'm a white Australian. I married a migrant girl from Argentina in a different part of Sydney. Already that was cross-cultural, but it was intentional because I met a beautiful girl called Viviana. And for me to go intentionally to her area of Sydney, I had to drive 45 minutes each way, visit her and her family. And I can actually remember counting the number of traffic lights when I'm driving. It was 22. I had to get through 22 traffic lights each way. So it's a long, hard road I'm driving. But of course, I was intentional. Now, Jesus and this woman he's going to meet have no romantic interest whatsoever. He just wants to reach Samaritans. But it really reminds me of that intentionality of going straight into a cross-cultural situation. When we came here to Japan, it was intentional. We got off the plane with a vision in our heart. We knew God was going to move in Japan. And we came with a team of 10 young Australians. You were 9 at that time. I don't know how much you remember of all those early days.
Bits and pieces.
We stayed at a Bible school for a couple of weeks, and then we moved into a house. But our young Australians and us, we dove straight into cross-cultural communication into Japan, which is not a hard thing, but it was something that was unusual. We sort of set up shop around Starbucks, and we wanted to hang out and observe the Japanese and finally meet the Japanese. But intentionality means we take steps. And a lot of people with cross-cultural missions often say to me, what's the first step? And I say, well, research, Google, look, travel documentaries, YouTube documentaries, go and visit the country, actually engage the culture. And by doing so, you'll learn a lot about yourself, about them, and about cross-cultural communication. So in this story, Jesus is about to meet a Samaritan woman. In fact, the very next verse, it says, at midday, a Samaritan woman came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, will you give me a drink? And his disciples had gone into town to buy food. So the intentionality wasn't necessarily at the well. The intentionality was to go into Samaria. He didn't know, I don't think he knew he was going to meet this woman. He just knew he was going to meet somebody. And I think that's what intentionality is. It's, Lord, I want to meet people. I want to engage with people. Give me wisdom. Help me to see what you see. Help me to love what you love. And the whole thing of intentionality means crossing a barrier, crossing a border. And as I said, even in Australia, as a cross-cultural country, I remember many times us making that approach to people of different culture, religion. And in Australia, it's very safe to do that. In Japan, it's very safe. It's just a harder problem with language, etc. But I do believe as believers in Jesus, we should have this heart to cross barriers. That's called intentionality, or being intentional. So I don't know. When you first came, you were a little kid. You had crossed a lot of borders yourself, right?
Yeah, definitely. It was interesting because when you first told us that we were moving to Japan, I had no like frame of reference to understand what those words meant. Like, is Japan a different city in Australia? Like, what does that mean? And so it was a different country, turns out. And we moved. But I think for me, having, you know, a home where we speak English and then being blessed with a school that also speaks English, I think the hurdle wasn't as hard as it could have been if perhaps that, you know, we were put into a Japanese school. Now, if I was into a Japanese school, then probably my Japanese would be better than it is today. So looking back, you could see like how that it's not such a problem, but in the moment at the time, it felt like to me as a young kid, 9 years old, that was the biggest like existential crisis that I was facing in my life is like, am I going to go into a Japanese school or an English speaking school? So that was an interesting concept for me to understand, but yeah, we got to meet many, many great people from many different nations at that school. And some of them are still my friends to this day, which is a blessing to understand that, like, having these cross-cultural experiences became normal to me. That the boundaries or the borders that maybe people would normally see being brought up in a different culture kind of erodes those boundaries. That they're not such a, well, you don't really notice them, you know? Like, oh, yeah. Was that a boundary? Oh, whoops. Was that a boundary? Whoops. Just making friends with different types of people from different types of backgrounds. So I think being in it, that initial step, I think, is more difficult, right? The intentionality. Last time we talked about having the passion for crossing the cultural boundary. But I think once you've crossed that first threshold, then I think those boundaries begin to become less of a boundary, like less of a, oh, I got to cross this. Oh, what am I going to? Like, it's just intentionality of life, of living life, of doing life with, you know, a great different number of people from backgrounds and cultures. And it just makes life rich and fun. So I love
it. And as you said, we were a family, united. We spoke English together. I guess we watched English programs together. I remember back then, American Idol had just started. We all watched it Sunday night together. There was like still our culture in an outside culture. We spoke English. We went to an English school. And we had 10 young Australians who spoke English. So we had a core of us. And I think where culture shock really kicks in is where there's less and less commonality. So Japan also wasn't that foreign because it's a first world country.
Right.
People are very sweet. We didn't have overt opposition. Even as Christians, we didn't have overt opposition from people who were not Christians.
Right.
It's a very nice place. So there was a lot of commonality. And yet I do hear of people that come here and talk about culture shock in Japan. And for us, we just never really had that. So I think being intentional helps all of this, all of the above, all of fitting in, meeting people, not having culture shock is being on mission with Jesus, really, which is what intentionality is in the New Testament, being on mission with Jesus, wanting to reach people with the good news.
That's great.
The good news for the Japanese people is that God loves you and has a plan for you, and he died for you, and would you like to know that? That's the good news. And I think that Jesus going to Samaria, we need to understand these two cultures were not all that different. Their history was different, and that's the problem. Because in their history, they did actually have a civil war about 100 years earlier. But in the last, when Jesus, he was about 30 something at this time, 31 and whatever. In those years before, around Jesus' birth, so 30 years earlier, there was only a little bit of opposition between the Jews and the Samaritans. There had only been a little bit of conflict, which the governors of Rome stopped. And so the dislike between the Jews and the Samaritans was more historic than actual at that time.
Interesting.
It is interesting because a lot of people in cross-cultural stuff bring up a lot about history. And right. I think what Jesus did very clearly was he went to Jacob's well, which is actually combined history. History of the Jews, history of the Samaritans. It was actually a point of commonality, not a point of difference. They were both going to agree this is a really good well by an ancestor, and God has blessed us. So commonality is part of engagement. Like, what do we have in common, and celebrating that in any culture? So, and then when there's disagreement, as there was with Jews and Samaritans about history, for example, the Jews said it's Jerusalem and the Samaritans said it's Gerizim, or here it's Shechem. The historical differences diminish as we're on assignment, as we're on mission with Jesus. Right. It doesn't mean history is irrelevant. It just means we need to put it in its basket that, yes, there's history, but we're going to put it behind us for the sake of Christ.
Right.
And I'd say this because a lot of people, well, I have read over the years, a lot of people go to places and they're trying to be quite divisive on historical issues. In fact, I remember early on here in Tokyo, we had a person come in from another nation and tried to sow discord over historical issues. And we had to say, hey, listen, we know there's historical differences. We're not in denial, but this generation doesn't know anything about those historical issues. And God wants us to bring peace. It says, when you enter a house, speak peace. We're entering Japan, speak peace. So, that person didn't come again, actually, from that other nation. But the thing is that we have kept the peace in history and culture. And I think Jesus going there and talking to the woman is a clear lesson to us that history must be put behind us. And I say this as well with terms of politics. We must put it behind us when we're reaching people. I'm not saying it's not important, but it's not important when we're sharing the gospel. And the same with a lot of issues. We've had health issues in the world the last few years, and we've got to put that behind us as we talk to people in their nation and their context. Because it's very important that we understand them and that we don't pick a fight with them over a historical, political, cultural issue even, which we'll come to in maybe next week or later weeks. We'll come to the issue of what do you do when there's a religious disagreement. But right now, Jesus has come and he's meeting a woman from a culture that's not that different. Let me explain also. The Samaritans believe in the first five books of the Old Testament called the Pentateuch or the Torah. They believe in Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, the same as the Jews, the same scriptures, exactly the same. So there is actually a lot of commonality with the law of Israel and the people of Samaria, and you actually start to see these people are different, but there's so much commonality that when you build on the common elements, that is, there is one God and he's creator and he's a judge and he's got goodness, and when Jesus meets the Samaritans, there's a lot of commonality as long as we don't bring up the historical cultural divide. And I think when the other group sees what Jesus does, there's such an openness. When we break the ground cross-culturally and are willing to, you know, we want to know you and love you and understand you, a lot of anything else diminishes. Hey, I think you've seen that with people from many countries, right?
Yeah, for sure. And like I like what you said, like we're not denying history. We're not denying events that have happened in the past, because any culture, any country is going to have its dark points, maybe not so great points in history. So rather than focusing on what makes us different, like you said, what makes us the same?
Mm.
I think people want that. I think people are tired of hearing about what makes us different or what makes me versus you, my belief versus your belief, my support versus your support. I think all of that stuff is divisive and it doesn't help the kingdom of God at all.
Yeah.
So being able to understand the past is great. Being able to understand history is great. I guess that's what we would call just observation, like understanding the culture, understand where the culture came from is important, but you're not going to lead with that. You're not going to lead with like, hey, guess what happened in World War II with the 18-year-old that you meet on the street. You know what I mean? Like you're not going to lead with those things. So I think it's important to understand the culture. Like you said, we have YouTube, which I guess we didn't have or you guys didn't have when you first came to Japan.
Yeah.
Imagine if you had this grand resource that the world has today, and there can be, you know, that can be a double-edged sword with positive information and negative information or how they spin it or the personal biases that different people have. But it is a great resource nonetheless. Mm-hmm. And there's so much we can learn from history, because when you look in history, you can actually find these golden nuggets that doesn't separate us, but actually unifies us.
Right.
So for you guys coming to Japan, what did you guys do to understand the culture, to observe the culture, to get a grasp on, yes, these are differences. So what are the differences? But then how are we going to bridge the gap between the differences to find the common ground?
We came here in 2002, which for a lot of you is really stone age with the internet and that. And it was. I mean, we had the internet, but it was basic. And so a lot of our preparation or reading was actual books, actual physical books, which you got at libraries or I don't know. We found some. We researched. We could order things, and we ordered them. And but a lot of those books did not really help us. It gave us a basic framework.
Sure.
But also, we arriving in Japan, we also felt a lot of that framework was not relevant anymore. In other words, it was written by a previous generation. For example, we read a lot of books that said Japanese are very groupthink, and they are, but not in all things. And so the groupthink concept is that you won't see individual Japanese make a decision for Christ or won't be able to seek God alone. They'll need their family. And we found that was not true at all. That young Japanese university, young adults were in a culture and community they loved. They were Japanese, but they were very open to be friends with foreigners and hear foreign ideas. So we found a number of the books we read were actually out of date.
Right.
In fact, I would even say some of the travel books which we had back then, now it's all online. If you want to investigate Japan, you know, best places in Japan, 10 best places or whatever you want to investigate, we didn't have that. But we had people's commentaries on Japan that was out of date. And I would say sometimes things are out of date. So you've got to make your own evaluation.
Right.
We were told that Japanese don't tell you their opinion. That is absolutely not true. In fact, we also learned that big companies like Coca-Cola and Nike actually came to the streets of Tokyo with taste tests or whatever, or, you know, the shoes that, like, do you like this? And the Japanese actually said yes or no. Like, it was yeah, like that, don't like that. So we marketing companies found Japanese were very upfront. It was a lot of fun to have an opinion. So once again, we did research, but we quickly had to observe and talk and interact. Was this information true, or was it true for a previous generation? Right. And this has been an interesting thing for us as pastors in Japan, is making up our own idea of how to share the good news of Jesus tastefully, communicate well, not miscommunicate, which is a different thing. To miscommunicate means we're just missing each other and there's no understanding. But to communicate means observation, understand the people. So Jesus knew the Samaritans intimately. There were Samaritans in Jerusalem. They would have been around. They would have been historically. They're right there at neighbors, right next door. And I just want to put a challenge out for anyone around the world that have neighbors that are from different cultures. It's up to us to cross the boundary. Mm. It's actually up to us to be the one to say hello, invite for a meal, say hello, you know, whatever it is. It's not up to them. It's up to us. And that's what Jesus did. He crossed a boundary. Mm. And we crossed the boundary to Japan. Everywhere you're living right now, there's migrants, there's refugees, there's people from different backgrounds. It's up to us to make them welcome into our life, into our world, whatever time we have. So I think this is a really relevant discussion, not just for us in Japan, but for our friends in Australia, in America, in many other countries of the world, where people say to me, how do we reach those people? And my answer is, well, you've actually got to meet them. Shopping center, sports fields, saying hello, which we're going to come to a bit later, where Jesus actually, well, he says there, he said to the woman at the well, Jesus said to the Samaritan woman, give me a drink. That was his opening words. Right. I need a drink. The bridge. So we need a bridge, and the bridge is usually around kids or sport or food. Really good to talk about people's ethnic food. I love, you know, we were recently in America and Southern California and Texas, and we just ate Mexican food for a week, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And we're foreigners. We don't have a big Spanish culture in Australia, but we're just having a blast. We are just loving a little bit of Spanish words and, oh, what's this? And taking an interest in people's things.
Yeah.
And so I just really encourage anyone wanting to break through cross-culturally is to take an interest in them. Hmm. Why do you do this? Or and I know a lot of people sort of a bit fearful, like, what will they think? But when you actually just friendly, most people say, oh, yeah, this is our food and this is made for, like, you're talking about them in a good way. And so Jesus is at this well at midday, and a woman comes up with her jar. We know that because later on it says she left her jar there. So she came with her water jar in the middle of the day, and Jesus speaks to her. And it's quite an interesting interchange, which could have gone off except for the masterful nature of Jesus being able to love her. So I think coming to a culture observation, talking about food here in Japan, we're talking about sushi and katsu and tempura, which is also good, right? So,
love it.
We're talking about clothes, fashion. We're talking about Japanese being sweet and nice, and Japanese being good at soccer now. And so we're finding a lot of points of starting conversations, which we're getting into another area. But I just think it's part of the observation of a culture. And as I said, you could look up 10 things in Japan, 10 areas, you know, Kyoto and the old city, and say to Japan, oh, you're from Kyoto, what's that like? So interest in them is actually a a studying thing, like you're studying, learning, talking, and asking questions. You know, here in Japan, we can ask Japanese, why do you do this or why don't you do that? And with a good heart, and they, oh, thank you for asking. You know, it's and you're from a younger generation. I think it's even more friendly, right? Oh, I don't know how you'd see that.
100%. Yeah. We at our church, we get teams from overseas, from mainly America. So young guys, we usually get them between, you know, out of college or out of high school, 18 to 30. And they go on the streets and they go to where young people are hanging out in Japan. And it's funny because let's say before the pandemic, we would try to meet people on the street and there was still, you know, lots of people very busy. It's a very busy culture, right? So we understand that as we're going out to meet people, that it's, they're not just rejecting you. It's not personal. They're just on their way from point A to point B. They're not going to stop. But these days, maybe it's the location that we've chosen, or maybe it's the new generation, this generation of Gen Z Japanese, that they are the ones now initiating the conversation with our people. They see foreigners and they think, I want to cross the culture. I want to have cross-cultural communication with you guys. So it's making the way that we meet people very easy, much different. Mm. And it's a beautiful thing to see that the current generation are much more willing, I think, to cross cultures because they like cultures. They like what's different. They like seeing a foreigner and thinking like, man, wouldn't it be amazing if I could talk to a foreigner? Like, what kind of edge do you have in any other country than that, just simply being a foreigner?
And yet I've been to so many countries in Asia. I've been to almost every country in Asia and I've found the same thing. As long as we have that curiosity, you know, I've been to Islamic countries, Buddhist countries, Hindu countries, Catholic countries. I've found the same thing as long as we have that curiosity, a bit of cheeky. Australians are a bit cheeky. We say, well, what's the food there? And we, and I think anyone can do that, not just Australians, the concept of what's that food? How do you cook it? And what? Just showing interest, and you're going to laugh, make friends, and what? And your illustration there, Monty, is another point about how culture has changed in a generation, or even in 10 years.
Yeah,
because 10 years ago we had to always approach the Japanese, and you're saying now they're approaching us. So once again, any book written on Japanese culture is out of date for young people, and that's really interesting. So we are actually cultural investigators, aren't we? Really, we're actually discovering all the time. And I would encourage anyone from Australia, or you know, again, migrants coming into your city, or people next door, like investigate, be friendly, ask them about food and culture, and you will find people will respond well. The only ones that don't, Monty's talking about people who are too busy, or people who are scared of you. And so we just have to break that barrier ourselves. And once we do, we'll make a friend. Yeah. And so I think it's great.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, you were going to say something?
No. I think it's just great with the observation aspect to understand the culture, but not to be so paralyzed by observation that you don't take any practical steps.
And so with Jesus, with the woman, we've got to understand that they did have cultural problems, but Jesus approach, befriends her. The whole story is he befriends her. She receives Jesus. She tells her whole village. They come out, meet Jesus. They all are open. So here is a Samaritan village that people could have had the mindset, Samaritan village, they're not going to be open.
Yeah.
Or Samaritan village, they're against us. And in a few hours, that whole false thinking is not just gone, but reversed, and there's friendship. And I think that we can really make friends with people of different cultures and religions, just by being friends. I've made many friends with Muslim people over the years. I love them, and they're fun, and their food is the best. how come you guys got the best food? But I tell them that, you know, I just say, I love your food. And in Indonesia is such a great country. One little phrase makes friends with everyone. I say the word for fried rice in in Indonesian is nasi goreng. You might have heard it, but
oh, yes.
I go to people, where's the nasi goreng? I want some nasi goreng. So it's like, I do like nasi goreng, fried rice, but it's like my big introduction to right. Indonesians is nasi goreng. And they're, that's a great they're always, bridge. Huh?
It's a great bridge.
And they're always, what? Like to them, it's like sandwiches, right? It's
sure, yeah, the basic.
It's basic every day, but oh, we love foreigners love nasi goreng, and it's a true bridge because I actually like nasi goreng.
Yeah, which helps.
I've got a good Aussie friend in the ministry, and we laugh together saying nasi goreng with an Australian accent sounds so terrible. Nasi goreng, mate, and even that works, you know.
Yeah.
And they go, what? Oh, you mean nasi goreng? Oh, yeah. So making fun of ourselves,
yeah.
Not making fun of the food. It's our accent. We're making fun of that. And then, oh, nasi goreng, thank you. And
yeah.
But it's actually fun just to talk about those issues. And when I'm in some other countries, their food is always going to be one of my big bridges to say hello. And Jesus, it was water, right? It was drink.
Yeah,
It was thirst.
Right.
So it'd be like me going into a health food store and say, what do you got to drink? You know, it's like, you know, it's getting ready, intentional. It's being intentional about friendship. But that's what we do.
Yeah. I think sometimes people are a bit, like I mentioned, a bit paralyzed. Like they get too much information. That's the opposite of the world we live in now, the other side of the coin, is that maybe you can do too much observation, too much right. YouTube, too much preparation, so much so that you feel like paralyzed that, oh, I can't take the step. But what unites us is surprisingly simple. Like you mentioned, Jesus in that case was thirst, water. Every human, we're immediately united by that one thing alone. Talking about food.
Yeah,
that unites so many people. You come to Japan and you tell people, hey, what's your favorite sushi? They will tell you. They will go into it. They love it. They want to talk about it. And I was talking with my wife, who is half Japanese, half Colombian. So there's cross-cultural there. But she grew up in Japan. She's Japanese on the inside. She loves sushi, absolutely loves it. And so she always, when she meets a friend, a girlfriend, she always goes for sushi with them because for me, I'm a simple Aussie bloke. And I just get the tuna or the salmon. It's not the experience. It's not the sushi experience that she wants to have. So she'll go with someone else and have the full sushi experience. So food is a massive uniting thing for crossing cultures. Even in Japanese TV, I would say about 80% of Japanese TV programs are based around food. It's a massive part of culture. And Japanese people are like going on the train 2 hours, 3 hours to this tiny town, this tiny place to get this sushi or to get this katsu or to get this udon. And they all go there and they're all like, ooh, oishi. And like literally every show is about that. So if we can understand that, hey, Japanese people love food. They love talking about food. They love eating food. Boom, automatically we have a practical bridge to start a conversation. Another practical bridge, like you mentioned, is saying the word like nasi goreng, an Indonesian word. Yeah. If you can get one or two words in a different, you know, language, you can immediately bridge the gap. There's Filipinos in our church and I might bust out my one or two Filipino words with them and you see their face light up like, oh, you know the word. Yeah, that's... And even though it's a short moment, that's a bridge. It's a 5-second bridge, but it's a bridge nonetheless. So I think some of those practical things, what unites us, food, language, water, simple things like that, travel, like exploring things.
Yeah,
I think those practical bridges work really well.
As a side note, I think you should start a YouTube channel on Monty and sushi in Japan.
Why?
I reckon it'd be a hit with foreigners. But yeah, I think people are seeing that we have fun with culture, that we're not scared of it, and we've got to break through. Often when you come to Japan, if you're coming here, people are scared, maybe a bit over-prepared. Now, we read all these rules about Japan. And we go, no, no, yeah. let's meet some Japanese. Let's go to the street. And at the end of the first day, there's actually an acclimatization. There's actually a feeling of rest. Mm. And first day in Japan was great. And so we do that all the time. I call it sponsoring people into a culture, or you're taking them through. That's actually true in church too. When you're taking someone through, it's going to be like this, and we're going to stand here and sit there, and we're going to, and like sponsoring people into an experience of church, I think is important. What do you have to wear or not wear? And, you know, because people are scared of all the rules, and we say, no, no, it's just follow me. And so it is entering a culture, having someone sponsor you in, and what's this and what's this food and what do I do here? And within a short time, people are feeling relaxed. It really is a fast thing. And so a lot of people talk to us about a lot of orientation coming to Japan. And we say, well, we'll give you some. There are some points, but let's go to the streets and we'll meet some Japanese and we'll go to Starbucks. And then, so really, Jesus did this on his own, but we also have friendships and churches to help. And I think when people band together, even in a church like in Australia with a minority group, someone coming in and becoming a believer, or we could say to them, how can we meet some of your family or friends and just do a barbecue? Mm. We say to American churches all the time, just be friendly with international students from any country in the world. They're in your cities. Just put barbecues on for them, because I think people are thinking, well, do we put a sushi on for the Japanese? And the answer is no. Put a burger on for a Japanese. like just be big and bold in you, as long as you're inviting them and sponsoring them into your experience. They will love it.
100%. So I think it's great that we've talked about these things, because last time we talked about having a passion, having the desire, first of all, to cross the culture. Today we talked about intentionality, being intentional with it. And part of that is observing, understanding the culture. But then once you understand the culture, it's not like you have to understand everything in order to bridge the gap. It could just be little bits and pieces here. So don't let that be a hindrance either. But the most important thing is to actually take that step to bridge the gap with whatever tools you have, whatever limited knowledge you may have. We're all able, I feel like, to bridge the gap somehow in an effective way to see people ultimately know Jesus through our, might feel insignificant at the moment, but through our interactions with different people from different cultures. What do you think? Any final thoughts from you?
Yeah, I think what we're discussing today is a whole lot of fun, right? It was what I'm sensing. So turning a fear of cross-cultural into a joy, finding a sponsor, finding someone that sponsors you into a culture, to the food, or the, like looking for the joy in that, someone in your church from that culture, or a foreign student, or the guy down the road in his restaurant from ethnic food, or just seeing cross-cultural through new eyes, that the world is ready. This world is ready. And my good friend Robert Barringer in Peru says this. He says, young people today have more, around the world, have more in common with each other than they do with their own grandparents. Wow. In other words, this world culture is so wonderfully developed for friendship, and let's just go out and meet some people. And once again, if people have come from something with historical barriers, you don't need to pray a long time to overcome that, to say, Lord, I pray for a fresh heart to these people, and where is an inroad? Where can I bless them? And I think we can lower the bar of fear and whatever is there, and just start to be friends. So my from this, I'm saying this is fun. This sounds like hard work, cross-cultural, you know, whatever. But actually, it is real fun when we are sponsored into it by someone who is very good at it. I really encourage people, find that person, make that contact, say hello, talk about food, drink, sport, whatever it is. You can do it, and I know that the world will be richer as we all do it together.
That's amazing. Well, on that note, we might leave it there for today. So if you're tuning in, why don't you tune in next time for us to continue this conversation about cross-cultural communication. But until then, I pray and hope that everyone has an amazing week, an amazing day, and we'll see you all later.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And if you enjoyed today's episode with Pastor Rod, why don't you subscribe on whatever platform you are listening to this, and we'll see you next time.